Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back for minute 102 to 103. We are midway through this week of episodes. I think this one's going to be probably the longer one of the week.
Okay.
At least according to my notes, after coming off a very short one yesterday.
This is probably my shortest week of or day of notes, but
interesting. All right. Well, maybe it'll even out to a average episode.
We'll see.
We'll find out.
Who knows? We might get on some bullshit, and this could be a 40-minute. Who knows?
So we are picking up in media somni in the middle of this dream. That's what the
God, you fucking nerd. Jesus Christ.
Mr. Latin, is that correct?
Bro, I haven't fucking thought about Latin in 15 years.
That's what the English to Latin translator that I pulled up said. So, if it's wrong, let me know, I guess.
Blame the internet.
We are in the middle of Paul's dream. Chani is coming off her looking at this explosion in horror. And it does this, like, I don't think we mentioned this yesterday, but it did like this really cool, like little dolly zoom into her face.
Yeah.
It's a very, very horror movie type of shot.
It was not a lens zoom.
No. This is the camera getting closer.
Yeah.
To your face. And it is something they do a lot. A lot when people are looking on in astonishment or horror. Sometimes it's a little bit quicker than this, but it is a very classic like camera technique that I love. I really like.
Yeah.
And it is different than like the Ken Burns zoom in on the picture kind of thing. But we cut behind her, and we see Paul running up the dune to her.
And she's just stood there.
Yeah, she's just standing there. We're seeing her behind the back. We're seeing her back. And he kind of like grabs her and pulls her to the ground. And
well, the moment he touches her, she just like collapses.
Yeah. And oh boy, what a Ooh, nightmare
jump
this is.
Scare.
Yeah. This is, I wasn't exactly ready for this because remember, I've not seen this full movie in a long time. I'm taking this minute by minute.
Yeah.
So I forgot about this part. And when I like was watching, I was like, oh shit, out loud. It startled me, because what we see is basically Chani's skin melting off.
Or Chani looks like fried chicken.
Yeah. Severe radiation burns.
Yeah.
From this, blast that she looked directly at, and she's got like burn wounds and looks like her hair is singed towards the, like the hairline.
Her eyebrows are gone.
Yeah. 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 Armor's all fucked up. She's not looking good right now.
No. Nah.
But she's still alive.
Yeah. Cause in the last like two or three frames, like her eyes begin to open.
Mm-hmm.
And then Paul wakes up.
Yeah.
And we flash back to reality.
Yeah, and probably not what he wanted to hear. Actual explosions going off.
Yeah. Before we go too far away from this, I have to call out the makeup's not that great. Because if you go through frame by frame on this, you can see where this like chicken skin mask that they put on Zendaya like definitely stops around the edges of her like face.
So they did like a Silence of the Lambs,
kind of, yeah,
face off thing.
Yeah. But you can definitely see like the edges of it, like around her, like jawline and everything. Yeah. It's
interesting.
Yeah.
Need a little more blending on the brushes.
Then. A little bit.
So yes, Paul wakes up, he hears actual explosions in the background of the real world. And Chani is not beside him. He rolls over and he looks and he starts to like panic a little bit.
Yeah, he immediately jumps out and just like starts screaming for her.
Well, before he starts screaming, he sees Gurney and all the other Fremen exit their tents. They're all getting up at the same time, looking around. And Gurney looks over and he's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So laugh line from Gurney. And we just hear like the rippling explosions. Like there's tons and tons and tons of them. Did you ever, or have you ever seen, there's a video, I think the Smithsonian, or maybe it was the British Museum put out, that it is the, an approximation. It's not an actual audio recording, but it's an approximation of what it would have sounded like at the very end of World War One.
Oh, it's not an approximation. It is a recording of the very end of World War One.
Double check that. I don't think it's an actual recording, because they say it's like historically accurate, but not an actual thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, but please.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So it's the Imperial War Museum.
Okay.
Releases an audio recording of the final minute of World War One.
But is it real?
Yes.
Okay, cool. For something I read yesterday on it when I was looking it up.
It was recorded near the River Moselle in the American front.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know why the thing that I was reading yesterday said it was like something that was put together, but they say it's like likely what... Okay, anyways, doesn't matter. When I heard these explosions and like this, the basically the drum roll of explosions going off, that's exactly what I was reminded of.
So were you living in Midtown when they detonated the Georgia Dome?
When did they do that?
It was before I moved into Midtown. So it had to have been like 2014, 2015, something like that.
Yeah, I would have been then. Yeah.
Yeah. From my house where I was, I could hear the detonations in the distance. So I've heard like big ass explosions like that off in the distance before.
I mean, hell, I can hear the fireworks from the Brave Stadium on Friday nights at my house.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, that's, and that is a ways away.
Yeah.
So yeah, and they're quiet and everything, but it's, you know, think of that, that type of thing, but times
artillery.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very loud and it's very like, it's disconcerting.
Yeah.
I often hear it at my house, which is probably just gunfire, from the surrounding neighborhoods. Yeah, we get to play that fun game of fireworks or gunshots. So Paul is shouting, Chani, and it almost seems like we hear this like mechanical sound. I don't exactly remember what it was, but like he turns around. It's some sound that I think it's just for the audience, but
yeah.
It makes him turn around and he sees Chani standing at the top of this ridge, just like in his dream
that he had seconds ago.
Yeah.
So
safe to say this was a vision, not necessarily a dream, depending on how you want to draw the lines between them.
Yeah. And he, you know, fucking books it up there, grabs her by the cheeks, and like you see him like look at her face for a moment, and
her,
it's like
her face cheeks.
Her face cheeks.
Yes.
Yeah. He doesn't run up and just grab her ass.
I don't know. You never know.
Oh my God.
Depending on which party's worried, it's damaged, I guess.
All right.
So he gets up there and all the other Fremen join them on the top of this, this ridge. And they are all just looking on out in the distance, really just in like astonishment and a mix of horror in there. They're taken aback by what they see.
All they see though are just bright flashes of light through a giant dust storm.
Yeah.
They can't see like directly what's being hit, but they know based on where they are, what the target is.
Mm-hmm.
And Siege Tabor is getting just fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nonstop.
Paul tells the audience what everyone else is thinking, Siege Tabor, except he says Tabra, Siege Tabra. And
I hate the way that they pronounce it.
Chani like buries her face in Paul's chest as she starts to cry. And then we cut to the actual barrage.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is getting just obliterated.
So these Harkonnen ships that we were talking about a couple weeks ago during the like military parade, mm-hmm. where they were flying in that, you know, formation and everything.
Yeah.
We see one of those and it's hovering like, I don't know, 20, 30 meters above the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fucking going at it, like nonstop barrage of missiles. And like you can see the like melted rock just like splashing everywhere.
Yeah. This laying waste to what looks like just the side of the mountain, but we know that it is, you know, it's the siege where everyone is inside. But point blank range, there's no shields here. This is just classic, old school, fuck them up.
Yeah. No longer millions of sieges.
Well, one less today. And I mean, and this thing is like, this is not just like missile, missile, missile. This is dozens of missiles per second.
Yeah.
That are being fired from the side of the ship. It's like the old, in the age of like sail, the broad ships where they'd have like 5, 6, 7 layers of cannons. Of
cannons on these giant warships. And it's just,
yeah. I mean, that's exactly what this is. I think what it's supposed to emulate in here. So it's just, it's crazy, but you know, we don't get a whole lot of it because the minute ends right here, right in the, after like 2 or 3 seconds of us seeing this, this barrage.
Yeah.
So the only thing that I'll say about the books this, or for this episode is we hear tales of this.
Mm-hmm.
So Fade and, Raban are kind of as a side quest in the book. They're just like sent off to go raid sieges. I have to imagine that, you know, well, I mean, we will see a little bit of that later on in the movie, but I have to imagine this is what they were doing out there.
Yeah.
You know, they'd find a siege, they'd just lay waste to it, go to the next one kind of thing. I say that because a storyline that is missing from the movie is the storyline of Leto the Second, the First.
Yeah. And... okay. Since we're talking about it, this is one of the things that like really irks me because I feel like that's such a pivotal moment for like Paul's anger being reignited.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they show that Paul in the movie here like cares very much about the siege and all of the people inside of it and everything, but like the death of his firstborn son is like what really fucking gets him going.
Yeah.
And we just don't have that at all.
No.
But if we had the proper time skip when we had this, but I wonder if it is just a matter of the movie's rating.
What do you mean?
Can you kill a baby in a PG-13 movie?
Babe, we can do whatever we want. I think you're allowed one.
You're allowed.
It's like the F word. You're allowed. You can either say fuck or you can kill a baby.
I don't think that's right.
No, it's not right. I'm making a joke.
I was gonna say. I'm like, pretty sure the MPAA has two different things to consider there.
Nope, that's actually the only things I look for.
Oh, okay.
No, well, so I say that I bring up Leto the Second, the First. Because
we hardly knew you.
And well, even in the books, we hardly knew him.
Yeah.
I feel comfortable talking about this because this is also a storyline that is nixed from the movie.
Yeah.
When Alia, is confronting the Baron at the end of the movie, we learn that they captured her. So the Emperor captured her during one of these raids that Fade and Raban was doing. That same raid happened to be the raid that killed Leto the Second, the First. And we learn about his death in a very funny, but basically throwaway line from Alia, where she says, yes, I allowed myself to be captured because I really didn't want to be around when my brother learned that you killed his kid. That's pretty much what she says.
Yeah.
Which is one funny, but that's how you're going to tell us that the kid died, Frank? Yeah. Come on, man. It got me thinking, like, as I was writing these notes, I was like, I know that Leto II, the first, died in the books, but I was like, I really don't remember how. So I had to go look for it, and I remembered. I was like, oh, no, we don't really know how. It's just one sentence.
The sci-fi miniseries actually digs in a little more on the death of Leto II, the first. But
they do, and they have Raban killing him in the miniseries, I believe, which is something they've made up for the show.
Sure. Well, we'll talk about more
of
that when we talk about the sci-fi miniseries.
But. Sure. But, yeah, I don't know. This was, you know, canonically, this attack was where Paul's kid died.
Yeah. I'm thinking that they exclude, like, now that I'm actually thinking about it, I think they excluded the whole Leto II, the first thing, to appease the MPAA and maintain the PG-13 rating. Because... spoilers for later on, but we get shots of a kid. This is for tomorrow's episode, but we're here talking about it now. We get shots of a kid who's like bloodied and like just kind of in a like shock daze.
Yeah.
But he's not hurt. So I think like, yeah.
Could be. Yeah. Cowards. Give us a rated R Dune. I want to see a rated R Dune.
A rated R Dune would actually be really cool, I think.
Yeah. So they're fine with slitting throats on screen and absolute stabbings and all that kind of stuff, but...
it's adult on adult violence.
Yeah, an off-screen death of a child is too much.
I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Anyways. Well, I mean, the Leto II, the first storyline being cut, I mean, yes, I agree with you that it is... it is what is supposed to reignite Paul's anger towards the Emperor and kind of get him back on track.
Yeah.
In the movies, they have Gurney do that. They have Gurney come back into his life and then get him back on the path for vengeance.
Well, Gurney kind of starts that in the books, but
he definitely doesn't stop it.
Not to the extent that he does in Denis's movies.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say. That's all. That's my book notes, and that's pretty much the book notes for the week.
Alrighty. Well, I think we call it there, and then we come back tomorrow so we can continue talking about this bloodied kid walking through in a, you know, shocked daze.
Yeah.
So, as always, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode, and we'll see you then.
See ya.